Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, July 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital and Adirondack Urgent Care in Queensbury, with lab services, medical imaging, and urgent care all in one location in Queensbury, saratogahospital.org. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Ida Nirenberg of New Vance Health. She is here to discuss headaches and neurology. Get your calls in now at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ida Nirenberg, headaches, the occasional migraine, your calls coming up on Medical Monday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here on this Medical Monday to discuss headaches is Dr. Ida Nirenberg of New Vance Health. Pardon me, and I wrote the script, and I apologize. Dr. Nirenberg is the director of headache medicine at New Vance Health. She is double board certified in neurology and headache medicine and is at the forefront of migraine treatment, including advances with infusion therapy and electroceuticals and other types of non-medication options to treat migraines. To be part of the conversation, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ida Nirenberg, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me here.
So nice to have you here. You know, first of all, what's an electroceutical?
So electroceuticals are neuromodulation devices. So there are several devices that electrical stimulation is applied in different areas of the body, like in the arm or the forehead, to help block pain pathways that are involving headaches.
Yeah, and what will it do for a headache?
Depending on the device. Some of the devices, there's one called Nerivio, that it helps decrease the pain signal coming from migraine. Another one is supraorbital nerve stimulation called Cephaly, and the idea is it could prevent and also break a migraine attack.
And do we know how it works or why it works?
We do know. For example, for Nerivio, the idea is it's called condition pain modulation, where pain inhibits pain. So a noxious stimuli that is not painful on the arm, it helps block descending pain pathways coming down from the brain.
Where did you grow up, by the way?
I grew up in Puerto Rico.
Okay, so you rolled your eyes when we were in here talking before the show, and you said, oh, a lot of headaches in America. Why? Why do you think that is?
We don't know. Headaches are a very complex neurological disease. A lot of people suffer from migraine and other headache disorders. Sometimes they run in families, but it's headaches are the second cause of disability in the world. Very prevalent disease.
Is there a lot of mystery there? I mean, is there a lot you don't know?
There's a lot of mystery because you cannot experiment in people's brains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I know for a fact that headaches can be, they can crush you if you're at work and you're trying to concentrate. But migraine is a different animal, right?
Yeah. Migraine is not just a headache. So regular headaches, we all suffer from, most people get regular attention type headaches. But migraine is a headache that is very disabling. It's a headache that makes you sick, that you vomit, lights bother you, smell noises, and people can't function.
Well, you are someone who is at the cutting edge of research and treatment of migraine. What have we learned? How do you handle this in a way that doesn't over-medicate people to the point where they fall asleep?
So it depends on how often people get migraines, and migraine is it's very varied. Some people have a lot of migraines per month, and there's a lot of triggers that we know about, but some migraine, the condition can be very unpredictable. It can happen with no rhyme or reason. And some patients get chronic migraine, which is a more disabling version of migraine, where patients get more than 15 headache days per month. Mm. And we target the treatment depending on how often people get migraines, and there's no cure for migraines.
You know, there's also these things, and we talked about this briefly before the show began, this visual migraine. I've never had one. I don't know what it's like. It is a real thing, though, right?
It's a real thing.
What is it?
Some people get migraine with aura or migraine, the most common migraine without aura, but aura is a visual disturbance that happens either one eye or the other eye and kaleidoscopes. It's basically the pain signal for migraine starts in the area that controls vision in the brain, and it's a migraine that is about to happen.
Why did you pursue this specialty?
To me, where I trained, where I did my neurology residency, we had an excellent headache doctor, and with her guidance, and she's my mentor, I saw that this is one of the few fields in neurology and medicine that is very rewarding once you figure out how to help people.
Dr. Ida Nirenberg joins us from New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question and want to jump in, I suggest you do that early. 800-348-2551. Let's go to lovely Marcy, New York. Joanne, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, doctor. I was just wondering, I have a question. My daughter suffers from a lot of migraines, and she has gone for Botox injections for cosmetic reasons. Is there any evidence at all that Botox injections can cause headaches or increase migraine headaches?
Usually it's the opposite, actually. So Botox is FDA approved for the treatment of chronic migraine. And the way they figure out it could be a treatment is that patients that were getting cosmetic Botox, the migraines were improving. And we know exactly how Botox works, but headache scientists, they think it somehow changes the brain signal for migraine.
Interesting.
Isn't Botox a poison, though?
Not the Botox they use.
It's botulism toxin, right?
Botulism toxin, yes, in high amounts. For you to get botulism, which is a condition that paralyzes muscles, you have to get 300,000 units. When we do for medical reasons, and Botox is used a lot for other medical conditions besides migraine, it's very small amounts purified.
Joanne, you want to follow up?
Very much.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. Well, let's talk about that Botox stuff for a minute. We see ads, and frankly, I'm not sure I entirely approve of seeing all these ads for medicines 24/7 on TV, partially because they have to list the side effects and they're terrifying. And some of these side effects on Botox they're nothing to, I mean, they're scary.
Yeah, a lot of the interesting with the side effects, when the FDA, when medications are getting on trials, they have to report every single side effect out there, whether it's medication related or non-medication related. So when you see the commercials, they quickly list all the side effects. But Botox, unless somebody doesn't have a neuromuscular condition, so there are conditions that people have weakness of the muscles, it has very little side effects. It's actually one of the safest medications out there for migraine.
And you said it changes the way the signals go to the brain?
So we know how Botox works exactly. So Botox prevents the release of a chemical that every time we move, this chemical is released from the nerves into the muscles that helps the muscles move. So that's how it works. But for migraine headache, scientists haven't been able to figure out why, but the thought is it changes the pain signal for migraine. Also, the areas, the muscles that we inject, there's the thought that there's sensory nerves that are getting desensitized.
Oh, interesting. Dr. Ida Nirenberg joins us from New Vance Health today. We talk about headaches and neurology, and we'll take a break here in a moment. Let's just talk briefly about dehydration. Anytime I get a headache at home, my wife says, you're dehydrated. Is that true? I mean, does dehydration cause headaches?
It can be a factor, definitely.
What 100%.
Happens? Usually, well, blood needs to go to the brain. So if we're dehydrated, blood is not coming to the brain as faster as it should, and cells get stressed in the brain, especially people that are predisposed to getting headaches and migraines. Definitely is a common trigger.
Now, wait, you mean if I drink more water, I make more blood?
It usually helps things move faster. Not making more blood, but it helps water is involved in our bodies and our blood.
All right, let's take a quick break. Dr. Ida Nirenberg joins us from New Vance Health. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Back with your calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Ida Nirenberg of New Vance Health joins us today. We're talking about headaches for the most part. And this email came in from Charles in Richmond, Massachusetts. Weather effect on migraine? for headaches that are preceded by or worsened by bad weather. Is there anything that can be done to reduce the effect of the weather? A case where medications have fully controlled the migraines, except, for instance, when rain is coming.
I wish we had a weather control to prevent that trigger, but it's definitely a known trigger. And we always think there must be some barometric pressure sensor in the brain because it's a very common trigger for migraines. The best way to do, because we cannot turn off the weather or the rain or the clouds, depending on how often people are getting migraines, then you do medication daily to decrease the frequency. If they're infrequent migraines with storms, then there are good acute treatments to break the duration of the attack.
It's very interesting, though. Even as a kid, if I had a headache, I more or less knew there was bad weather coming. But I never had migraines. Mm-hmm. But do we know, is it low pressure that causes the headaches, or is it high atmospheric pressure?
We don't know. It's just a fluctuation in barometric pressure, but we don't know. There must be some sort of sensor, but everything I've researched, I haven't found an explanation for this, but we know it's a common trigger.
All right. Dr. Ida Nierenberg joins us from New Vance Health today. We talk headaches and neurology, and this email from Kyle. Kyle writes, I take Imitrex for occasional migraine. It makes my jaw tingly. Is that a normal side effect?
It can be a normal side effect. So Imitrex is a serotonin agonist, and that particular receptor it acts on is on arteries, and it can cause funky side effects like constriction, chest tightness, tingling, and it's all when the medication is acting up. But it's nothing life-threatening.
Is it worse than the headache?
Usually not. Okay. The headache, the migraine is worse.
Okay, let's go to the phones once again at 800-348-2551. Jim is in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
How do nitrates influence the development of headaches?
How do nitrates influence the development of headaches?
Oh, good afternoon. So, patients with migraines are very sensitive to foods with nitrates. And also migraine patients that take medications like nitroglycerin, it can affect migraines. And it's mostly because they can cause expansion of the arteries. We can worsen the pain signal in a migraine attack.
Jim.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Ida Nierenberg joins us today. And let's see. We go to Monticello. And Adam, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I have a cluster headache.
Oh, boy. You have a cluster. Your signal. Hang on there, Adam. Your signal's bad. You said, I have a cluster headache, and then we lost you.
Is this better? I took it off speaker.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have cluster headaches. I was diagnosed, and I get it usually every summer.
Okay.
So far this summer, I've been lucky, thank God. But the only thing that seems to work for me is oxygen. I take an oxygen concentrator. None of the medicine seems to really help me. And I was wondering if you prescribe that in your treatment, as well as do sulfites. Can that trigger as well migraine headaches, cluster headaches?
Yeah, definitely. Cluster, I'm sorry. They're one of the most disabling versions of headaches out there. Just to explain a little bit, they call them suicide headaches because the attacks are very severe. Definitely sulfites, like in alcohol, can trigger cluster attacks, but we don't know. The attacks come around the same time every year. There must be some seasonal variation, but usually the treatment of cluster, it's acute. Do you have tried triptans or the injections or the sprays? And definitely oxygen is known to help in cluster headaches.
Adam.
The triptans, I had very bad reactions to the triptans, like also the chest pain.
Okay.
I was scared of getting a heart attack, so I felt that the oxygen so far has been the best treatment,
okay.
But when I'm in a really bad cluster, even that doesn't help, and I'm just like going out of my mind with the pain.
Sometimes what we do with cluster, we do a steroid taper over a few days to help shorten the duration, and there are, depending on how long the duration of the attacks, we put patients on preventive medication, and there are newer medications that came out. One is galcanezumab. That it acts on a very specific pathway for migraine and headaches, but it has FDA approval for cluster headache, which has been very effective for a lot of my patients.
Adam, thanks a lot for the call. I've never heard of cluster headaches. So these are headaches that come one after another for a long period of time?
It's a little bit different. So the attacks in cluster attacks, they come around, for example, same time every year for like 1 to 2 months or 1 to 3 months. And during the attacks, it's a very intense attacks. It's like usually a one-sided. The attacks last 30 minutes to up to 3 hours. And it's like It's a drill going to your eye.
Really?
And during the attacks, people have other symptoms that are not common with migraines, like tearing, runny nose, redness of the eye. It's part of a class of headaches called the trigeminal autonomic cephalgias. And they're all one-sided, intense pain, and the attacks are vicious.
And we don't know all that much about what triggers them?
Some of the usually cluster headaches, they happen more in males in their 30s. They run in families. Alcohol is a common trigger. They happen around the same time every morning. But women get them, too. I have many patients that are females.
Very interesting that they happen, or they tend to happen, at the same time of year. And scientists really don't know why?
No, because we cannot mimic those headaches in animals, and you cannot experiment in people's brains. There's 5 headaches in this class, and they found out that one area of the brain is illuminated in this headaches, which is the posterior hypothalamus, which the hypothalamus is an area where all the hormones start coming in the brain.
So you say illuminate, and that means you are watching this through what sort of scope?
Oh, they're checking MRIs of brain activity. The headache scientists, they're doing a lot of MRI, functional MRIs, to see brain activity.
Wow, that's so fascinating. Dr. Ida Nierenberg joins us from Nuvance Health today. It's Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jack is in Cooperstown. Jack, you're up.
Yes. I get the aura migraines, and I've had them since I was a kid. I don't get any pain, and I usually get them like one day, and then I'll get the next day I'll get another one, and then I won't get them for a week or so, and then I'll get another one. And I was having 4 or 5 of those a month. About 2 years ago, I had a heart attack, and I had stents put in, and they prescribed Brilinta. Mm-hmm. And from the moment they prescribed Brilinta for a year, while I was on it, I didn't have a single migraine. Okay. I'm just wondering if that is something that potentially could be is a treatment for it.
So Brilinta, like the blood thinner?
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't heard that as a potential. But when you were getting the auras, how long were they lasting?
They would only last maybe 20 minutes or so.
Okay, so they were brief.
And I had no pain. But from the moment that they prescribed Brilinta, after I had stents put in, for a whole year, I had not a single migraine. But then they took me off of it, and within a month, I started having the migraines again.
That is interesting. I haven't heard of that as a possibility, but yeah, that is interesting.
All right, Jack.
But they'll. Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead. No, go ahead. You can finish it up if you want.
Well, they also prescribed aspirin, the low-dose aspirin, with it. But I'm still taking the low-dose aspirin, but I'm still getting the migraines. I'm not getting as many as I used to, but I'm still getting them probably 2 or 3 a month.
So usually I worry when their auras are lasting longer because it could be a predisposition to getting blood clots. But magnesium is one supplement that stabilizes receptors in the brain and decreases the auras. It's tougher to treat the migraine auras without the headache because it's very difficult to figure out treatments for those. But that's interesting. I'll look into that.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Ida Nierenberg joins us today. While we're on the topic of aspirin, aspirin has been something that we have been taking for headaches for, I don't know, 100 or more years. Mm-hmm. What does it do?
So when there's headaches and migraines, there's inflammation. So most headaches come from this nerve, from the trigeminal nerve, which is the nerve that carries sensation to the face, but also connects to pain generators for head and neck pain, and also connects to arteries in the brain that they release pain-causing chemicals. So that's what we call inflammation. When you cut your finger, everything becomes red. That's cells that are getting released that bring inflammatory markers, and that's what causes the pain. So that's why medications like ibuprofen, that's my medication of choice when I have a headache. I take ibuprofen. Yeah, high doses because it decreases. It's more powerful anti-inflammatory.
You know, what I do, and maybe this is wrong, but I will often do an ibuprofen with a baby aspirin together. Is that a bad idea?
I wouldn't add the baby aspirin.
Why?
Because it's too much of, it's different mechanisms. But the baby aspirin is on the different mechanism that is not as great for pain.
But if I were to take, there are those over the counter medications, and I won't say it by name, but it begins with an E and it ends with an N. Okay. That is a combination of aspirin and caffeine and ibuprofen, right?
And too much of that medication, we call them combination analgesics, it can cause more headaches for migraine patients. So it's a it's a bane of the headache doctor's existence, because a lot of patients are taking and some medications they label for migraine, and migraine patients, if you take too much of it, it can cause more headaches.
We're joined today by Dr. Eden Ehrenberg of Nuvance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question, and back to the phones, Clark in Mount Hope. Clark, you're up.
Hey, back to the cluster headaches.
Okay.
I remember 30 years ago. Can you guys hear me?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, 30 years ago or so, I had what turned out to be cluster headaches. Back then, they couldn't figure it out. And it was a brutal thing. You say, like, every season, every month. For me, it was early spring, but it peaked every day for about 4 weeks. And then it got down to the time. It's going to be around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, boy, no, it didn't matter where I went. Didn't matter what I did. It didn't matter what I drank. It would just get ready, and here we go. And it's brutal. It's a brutal ride.
Do you have any comment on that, doctor?
Yeah, definitely. I have many patients that go underdiagnosed for many, many years, and it's really sad, because now we can treat them very well, but they're brutal. And it's like clockwork, like you said. They happen around the same time every day. We don't know why. There must be some sensor in the brain that tells that it's going to hurt.
Parasite, I don't know. I'm no expert, but I grew out of it. I don't have them anymore, and I'm grateful. I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't come back, but if they ever do, because headaches and primary headaches, like cluster headache, they can come back with no rhyme or reason, but go get help. There's a small amount of headache neurologists, but there are some in the area. So,
Clark, thanks for the call. Why is there a small number?
Because usually headache medicine, unless you're trained in a place that they have good at headache doctors, you have no exposure of how to treat patients. And there's a lot of frustration, because most primary headaches, like migraine and cluster headaches, patients look normal. MRIs, imaging is normal, but the pain is very real.
You know, the pain is real, but there are mysteries as to, especially these cluster headaches, how they appear. Mm-hmm. And listening to the last caller, Clark, who thankfully is over this, he said it got to the point where he said, okay, it's coming at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I wonder, is there a mechanism in your own mind where, like a mind over matter, where you are, you say, I know I'm going to have a headache, and then you get a headache?
Well, this one is probably more like signals deep in the brain, like circadian rhythms. Like we have like regulation and sleep. Like cluster headaches usually commonly people, they awake them from sleep. So people are sleeping and wake up from sleep. So it's a common thing. There are some other headaches that are the classic stories, like people wake up from sleep from them.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's more just mind over matter that it's coming.
I'm not saying Clark was making it up. No. I'm just saying that there are mysteries of, in other words, some people have the power to quell pain that they are feeling. They have a better pain threshold, let's say. But I'm wondering if the mind could, in fact, a self-fulfilling prophecy may happen.
With migraine and cluster is different.
Yeah.
Usually for migraine, I know so many patients that they live in fear that about when the migraine might come, because they come with no rhyme or reason.
Dr. Eden Ehrenberg joins us from Nuvance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's go to Amherst, Massachusetts. Liz, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I am calling because I have definitely had about 10, 12, 15 years of headaches that have been undiagnosable, all sorts of scans and CAT scans and such. The closest that they said it came to in description were cluster headaches. And I just recently learned, I don't know, within the last couple of weeks, that I have some pretty severe cervical spinal stenosis. And I am wondering if that could be a contributor to these headaches that are undiagnosable.
So for primary headaches, I always tell patients, the day you find a doctor that tells you, I exactly know what's causing your migraine, I said they're lying, because I know many good headache leaders that we don't know for primary headaches. Now, there are nerves in the back of the skull that are branches of the first cervical and spinal nerves. There are two nerves called the greater and lesser occipital nerve. They're branches of C1, C2, C3, and they usually feed into the pain pathway for migraines. So there's connections in the back of the front, but pure migraines and headaches from just spinal stenosis is very, very rare. And I've had patients that gone through surgeries being told it's going to fix your migraines, and it's rarely the case.
Liz.
Yeah, this is in T4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, that's usually lower down.
T4, 5, and 6.
Lower down. So, yeah, most neurologists, we don't recommend getting surgery for spinal stenosis unless you have signs of compression in the nerves in the arms. But for headaches, the nerves that are involving head and neck pain or headache pain, there are branches of C1, C2, C3.
All right, Liz, thanks a lot for the call. I'll tell you what, I believe Barbara in Leverett was on much earlier in the program, and her signal dropped. Let's go to Barbara now. Barbara, you're on.
I got it.
I'm glad you got it. You're on.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, thank you. So I got my first migraine when I was pregnant with my first child. My father had migraines with no pain, but I had hemiopsia. I went blind, had auras, partially blind. And then, of course, had the headache. Sometimes I didn't have the pain. Most of the times I had awful pain. Mm-hmm. Now I'm 35 years later. And I have, as I got older, went through menopause, have no migraines at all. At all. No auras, nothing. It was hormonally or whatever. That was one of the blessings of growing a little bit older. But I did have a thunderclap headache every so often. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so 50% of women, migraines go away after menopause. Before I learned and studied more about migraines, I used to think, oh, after menopause, they go away. So now I know better, but we're lucky. But thunderclap headaches, that's where headache doctors, we worry about that because it's a headache that peaks quickly, like within a second. And it's like somebody hit you in the back of the head. So what we do when patients have new onset thunderclap headaches, we're making sure we're ruling out secondary things. Like the main things are brain bleeds or meningitis can present with thunderclap headaches. But there's another condition of a type of artery inflammation that is called reversible cerebral vasoconstriction syndrome that presents with thunderclap headaches. We always rule out secondary causes. And I will get, those are the cases I will get all the studies possible.
Barbara. Are you still there, Barbara? I think we lost Barbara again. How many different types of headaches are there, doctor?
So the way we diagnose headaches is all by history. So I ask a lot of questions when I meet patients, but there's this book called the International Classification of Headache Disorders. Now it's in the third edition. So I call it the Headache Bible.
Yeah.
There's over 200 headaches in that book.
200 different kinds of headaches.
A lot. They get very specific in that book.
Give me an example.
For example, alcohol-induced headache. It's a hangover, but it's part of the book.
Oh, you hit the page I know very well. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dr. Ida Nierenberg of New Vance Health joins us, and we'll be back with the home stretch in a moment. Vox Pop, it's Medical Monday. Dr. Ida Nierenberg of New Vance Health joins us. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And this email from Diane. Subject heading, one close to home for many of us. Coffee withdrawal headache. Why does skipping my usual coffee result in a headache? Also, if I have my usual two cups in the morning and none in the afternoon, I wake up the next morning with a headache that goes away with morning coffee.
So coffee acts on a receptor we have in the brain, adenosine, that is involved with artery constriction and expansion. So that's probably the withdrawal headache that people get.
Yeah. Okay.
I get it with them, too, if I don't drink my coffee. It's very common.
Do you have enough coffee, doctor, for the end of the show?
I had enough for today.
All right, fair enough. This one is from Evan in Miami. Evan says, I began suffering from tension headaches seemingly stress anxiety induced during the corona pandemic. I have tried tricyclic antidepressants and relaxation breathing yoga techniques. They have helped. However, headaches, which have been lasting months, varying in daily severity, seem to keep lingering and don't want to completely disappear. Is there anything you could recommend to help?
So yeah, tension type headaches are the most common type of headache out there. Like 89% of the population have them, but people don't get help unless they become very frequent, which in the headache society world, we call it chronic when people have more than 15 headache days per month. Tricyclic antidepressants are a good choice. They usually help with breaking the headaches. Other things, sometimes like physical therapy can help, depending if there's a lot of neck spasm because of those nerves I mentioned before. Other medications, there's one medication called Neurontin that I have found good success with tension headaches, but that's one of it's tougher when they become chronic.
You know, it seems, well, we'll read this email first before I ask this question. This is from Andrew. For years, I've had those visual migraine things, but I don't actually have the headaches. I consider myself lucky. They occur every once in a while, a couple times a month, for about 10 minutes. Is there anything to worry about?
Usually not. We usually, most migraine patients, we check a scan to make sure if there's a baseline MRI. And we don't waste time with CAT scans. We go straight to MRI, neurologist. But if especially if they're running families, we don't worry about it. We worry, like I said before, if they're lasting longer than an hour, then we're making sure that because some conditions that can predispose to blood clots and strokes, they can present with frequent auras. But they usually happen more often.
All right, my question, based on the last email about antidepressants, goes like this, and I'll see if I can phrase it well. Oftentimes, we will see in medicine a medication that is off-label. In other words, you're using it for a different, not off-label, what do you call that? Where you use it for a different thing that it was originally invented for.
It is off-label.
Okay. Yeah. And so Botox, Botox was developed for what originally? Cosmetic reasons?
Cosmetic reasons.
Right. And so now we found it works for headaches. Do we know what antidepressants do to help headaches?
Oh, yeah. Definitely they work on keeping higher serotonin active, and that decreases pain. So migraines or headaches in general, I always tell the way I explain to patients, a chemical storm in the brain, different areas are activated. And a lot of the treatments that we use are off-label, just based on different chemicals that act on the brain. So one thing I teach, I have neurology residents in my hospital now. I teach everybody, don't assume that if somebody's taking a medication, if it's an antidepressant, that is for depression. Because in neurology, we use those medications for other kinds of conditions.
How are you enjoying having the residents?
It's a learning curve. I'm happy they're there, and I'm very involved because I want to make sure they become good neurologists.
Okay. Are you a tough taskmaster?
I'm good. Tough love, but the era of the mean doctors, hopefully that's going away.
Okay.
Slowly.
Dr. Ida Nierenberg joins us, and let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Holly in North Adams.
Hi, nice associate.
Hello, Holly. You're on.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
So right after I had my son in 2015, I started getting some, like, those visual migraines. And then that was followed by, like, feeling really sluggish, like a lot of brain fog and days where I couldn't even move. So I got an MRI in 2018, and it revealed that I do have two lesions on my brain. And I had a neurologist tell me that the lesions were caused either by a medication that I was on possibly for, like, a long period of time since a child, or they were migraines. So they diagnosed me with fibromyalgia. I have lots of pain and problems all the time. And then I recently just went to the doctors because I had a really bad bout of, like, something where I had a lot of, like, pain in the back of my head. But then in the front, like, feeling like in my frontal lobe, like, just dysphoria and, like, just it was horrible. And they said that that was something with the occipital nerve. And then I was just recently diagnosed with shingles, and the doctor said that I may have had shingles for the last 3 years, but that still doesn't tell me why I have lesions on my brain or, like, what is going on. Is this caused by migraines or is this something more?
So those
basically is my question.
Yeah. Okay.
So those spots in the brain, they're very common. They're called non-specific Y matters changes, and these are spots in areas of the brain that radiologists haven't figured out what causes them. But they don't cause anything, and that's something that whenever I have a patient that I'm gonna get an MRI, I will tell them we might find this to give a warning because it will scare you. But it's a very common finding in migraine. They did actually, there's a study that they did called the CAMERA study that they review charts of over 300 MRIs of over 300 migraine patients, and they found out that this is a common finding. That's what it says, it's migraine. It's not the way we diagnose migraine, but it's common. If it's very minimal, we don't worry too much about it. We don't have an explanation because we're not going to do autopsies in people to see what causes these spots. But it's a very common finding in migraine.
Why wouldn't we do autopsies in people to find the spots?
Because that will cause more harm than finding the answer. No autopsies, to get samples of the brain. That's what I meant to say.
I gotcha.
And in autopsies, these doesn't show. These don't show. It's very minuscule.
All right, Holly, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Eden Ehrenberg joins us today on the program. And Roy is in Western Massachusetts. Roy.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
So I'm wondering if there's any relationship between small cell arterial vasculitis and migraines.
So vasculitis and migraines, it will be, that's what we're causing, because vasculitis is an inflammation of the arteries, and it can present with migraine-type headaches, usually in patients over 50. It's not that it causes the migraine, it's just a secondary headache. So that is something that the treatment is completely different and doesn't predispose you to getting migraines after the treatment. It's actually when there's vasculitis and we treat the vasculitis, the headache goes away. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. It actually came because of a biopsy looking for large cell arterial inflammation, and they found small cell. So is there treatment for that?
Usually steroids.
For small cell?
Yeah, we send to rheumatologist.
Go ahead, Roy.
I got that. I'm there. I was just wondering if there's something different or there might have been some other cause. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Roy. We appreciate the call. And now to Ed in Poughkeepsie. Ed, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. You can hear me, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. I had called about one thing, but listening to the other things, I just want to add some quick things and then go to my major agenda. The person who called earlier and reported that their auras went away when they were taking some medicine that began with B or V or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can anecdotally report that I used to have auras, not all the time, but I had them. They never bothered me. I felt I was in a Mel Brooks movie for free. But they seemed to go away after I started taking Xarelto, which, of course, is the same sort of class of drug. So I just report that, and it's anecdotal.
Thank you.
Okay. My main issue or question has to do with the other end of the body, neuropathy, idiopathic peripheral neuropathy. I don't know if the doctor wants to field a question about that or not, but there was a bridge comment a moment ago. Do you want to field a question about that?
So neuropathy in the feet, to be clear, right?
The feet?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well,
is it okay to ask a question?
Sure.
That's okay.
She doesn't have to answer it, but you can ask it all the same. Go ahead, doctor.
Okay. She's been talking head, and all of a sudden I go to the feet.
Is that okay?
That's okay. Yeah, I am neurologist after all.
So go ahead, doctor.
Okay. And the connection is you had somebody come on and talk about off-label uses of antidepressants. Mm-hmm. That is exactly, of course, what has been prescribed for me for my neuropathy, Lyrica and Cymbalta. And they have more or less controlled it for a period of 10 years. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, as it were, for a free checkup, are there any newer drugs on the market that are going to work like that? And then I have one follow-up question.
Oh, okay. We have time in the show. All right. Go ahead, doctor.
So far, not. Right. And then Lyrica is an anticonvulsant. But, yeah, so far, yeah, nothing that I've heard
Okay.
newer for neuropathy.
All right. Your follow-up, Ed.
Okay, my quick follow-up has to do with, I take antidepressants. Therefore, I'm on a perpetual high, as it were, from those antidepressants, or so it would seem. Would that be the case, that if I were not taking those, forget the neuropathy, if I were not taking those, I might be a little more toward the depression end of the spectrum. They were not prescribed to me for depression at all, but am I, as a result of taking them, on a bit of a high?
Usually not. If you don't have an underlying primary depression, it shouldn't be like if you ever come off the medications, it shouldn't cause the opposite effect.
Okay, Ed. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Jerry, who's on the Northway. Hello, Jerry on the Northway.
Hi, how are you? We're in Plattsburgh now.
Nice.
Listen, my question is to the doctor, is that with some of your migraine patients having auras, is there any relationship with an aura from a, could be epileptic in origin, some of them?
Usually not. Yeah, usually migraine auras are completely different than the epilepsy auras. And if I have patient, and I have patients that have epilepsy and migraines, but if a patient with migraine presents with a seizure, I'm worried about something else causing the headache.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, Jerry, thanks for calling from Plattsburgh, beautiful Plattsburgh. Abby in Kingston. Abby, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling. I have had migraines with auras since I was a teenager. And in my 20s, I pretty much was getting them two or three times a month. I had a baby a year ago, and since being postpartum, I've only had two auras. And my mother experienced the same thing. Once she had children, she stopped having migraines. So I was just curious what the hormones are, what's happening with my hormones to make it go this way. And then I was also curious if at some point in my life, perhaps like menopause, I should expect my auras to come back in more severity, or what the correlation is.
That is very complex. But yeah, migraines usually in pregnancy for a lot of women, they get better. And it's a fluctuation in hormones, but it's a very difficult thing to study. But I've heard it all. Some patients, it's the opposite, that after pregnancy, the migraines become worse. Or in menopause, I wouldn't be living in fear that they can come back. I've had patients that when they're perimenopause, the migraines become worse and then they improve, but it must be the different fluctuations in hormones, but we have no idea because it's very difficult to study.
Abby, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Ida Nierenberg joins us today. How many different causes are there for migraines?
So most of the common triggers in women, hormones, weather changes, lack of food, lack of sleep, dehydration, sometimes certain foods, like somebody mentioned nitrates, but other foods can cause migraines.
Sulfites and whatnot.
Sulfites in certain alcohols, and stress is the number one trigger, but I will never tell my patients, hey, your migraines are due to stress, because it's never that simple.
All right, and let's now go to Albany and Lynn. Albany, you're on. Hello, Lynn.
Oh, hi, I'm sorry. Hi. Thank you for taking my call, doctor. Several weeks ago, my sister had an incident where her eyes lost focus. She was driving, and her eyes lost focus, and they kind of moved around in a strange way. She went to see her ophthalmologist, and he told her she had an ocular migraine. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So the headache doctors, we like to call them migraine aura without headaches. But with that, when there's eyes moving and focus, you have to be careful, because if you Google migraine aura, you'll see the different shapes and colors and zigzag. But it's, a lot of the times it's a headache, a migraine that is about to happen, and it just based on the area of the brain that where migraine starts. The signal for migraine starts in the area that controls vision. But in those cases, we like to check MRIs, make sure there's nothing else that explains it. Sometimes vertigo can be presenting with migraine-type symptoms like that as well. Vertigo is like an inner ear off-balance sensation, which happens while driving.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. And now we have time for perhaps one more here. We go to Cobleskill. Linda, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call. I had migraines without auras for 25 years, went through menopause, and then they went away. But now I have headaches. that seem to start in the back of my neck. They go up my neck. They go right to my head. My jaw is very, very tight. And because I have stage 2 kidney disease, I cannot take ibuprofen. So I'm one of those patients that takes acetaminophen, caffeine, and aspirin pills. And 80% of the time I can get it. But it's like an alarm clock between 4 and 4:30 every morning. I wake up with these headaches. Not every day. I'd say 5 out of 7 days a week.
Okay.
Is there anything else that I can take?
So sometimes we can treat those. So that might be there's an alarm clock headache called hypnic headache. That it's the classic story that wakes patients up from sleep like clockwork. And it doesn't, it's like intense pain, but it doesn't have the migraine features. Like lights don't bother you, you don't get nauseous. Funny enough, the treatment for those headaches is a strong cup of coffee before bed.
Aha!
And headache doctors don't know why, but if you look it up online, there's a great resource for headache patients, American Headache Society and American Migraine Foundation. It's hypnic headache.
Interesting. Well, Linda,
hypnic headache.
Yeah.
Hypnic. Okay, well, I will look that up, and I appreciate the information. And I am very careful about caffeine because I want the caffeine in the pill to work when I take it.
Ah.
But, yeah, that one and then too much of those combination meds, more than 10 days per month, can cause more headaches.
Okay, well, you know what, Dr. Nirenberg, we're done. You did very well. Did you have fun?
I had fun.
All right.
Don't
run out of here yet. We have another 30 seconds to go. Well, we hope you come back. We have so many people on the line who didn't make it through. Obviously, a hot topic, this headache thing. Mm-hmm. Best of luck to you. Support comes from the bariatric program at Adirondack Health, Saranac Lake, offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education. Better health, better lives, AdirondackHealth.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Ina Nirenberg for joining me today. Ida, that is, not Ina. Of New Vance Health. And once again, thank you for listening. Terrific calls. We had 10 jammed lines when we ended the show, which means we got to have Ida back again in a month or two, and we'll do this again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. I give him a headache, and I've been doing so for at least 15 years now. Yes, no aspirin will cure you there, Zach. Thanks to Joe Makowitz, who screened the calls. And I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Plumbing with Alan Ayers. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.